Majeski, Kirshner.
When this case was originally filed in the district court in Hammond, there were a number of issues. A declaratory judgment was sought on numerous issues. As the case appears before this court today, I believe there is only one issue remaining, and that is whether the fact, which is undisputed, that Jesse Taylor, who was driving the vehicle at the time of this unfortunate collision, who had a suspended license, creates an exception to the Indiana anti-subrogation rule. Judge Moody ruled that it did. The research that we have done and opposing counsel in their briefs have cited no case where the Indiana Supreme Court has addressed that very issue. There are several Court of Appeals cases from the Indiana Courts of Appeal involving coverage issues, but none on the issue of whether or not the fact that Jesse Taylor did not, at the time of the collision, or that the driver, in our case Jesse Taylor, who at the time of the collision did not have a valid commercial driver's license, created a situation where the...
Apparently he was a truck driver, but his license has been suspended.
His license has been suspended, and I do not believe, Judge Kennedy, that there is anything in the record indicating the circumstances or the time concerning the suspension.
Does that have to be in the record?
Does it have to be?
He just isn't... He has no license whatsoever.
He did not have a valid license. That's correct.
Right. Whether it was suspended or terminated.
Right.
The reason
that I think it matters is, let's assume, and I'm not suggesting this is a fact, let's assume that his license expired the day before. Under the ruling, say, well, you're out of luck because your license expired yesterday, and therefore you do not have a valid license. There is nothing in the record, and we have an agreement, a 30-some page agreement, 4 years old, that admittedly has a provision in there that says that the vehicle is not to be operated by someone who does not have a valid commercial driver's license. And in this case, the vehicle was. And the question then becomes, where do we go from there? And we believe that with nothing further, that the
agreement doesn't say anything specifically about a license, does it? It just says, talks about permission.
Well, and I think there is a provision with regard to requiring a valid commercial license. When Judge Moody indicated that there had been comments made in briefs that the deposition of Mr. Taylor had not been taken, and the court said, you know, we can't sit around and wait forever while parties decide whether or not they're going to pursue discovery, and there had been one or two status conferences where one or more of the parties indicated that they were having difficulty having a subpoena served on Mr. Taylor for the purpose of taking his deposition.
But sir, doesn't the agreement specifically forbid anyone operating their vehicles without a valid license?
It does.
Well, then how do you get around that? I mean, whether it happened an hour before,
well,
or
think,
6 months before, he
I
didn't
think,
have a valid license
well,
when he operated the vehicle.
I think our argument is whether that provision in that agreement under the law of Indiana in and of itself is enough to to negate the so-called anti-subrogation rule. And the cases involving these matters are all fact-specific. And as I said, there are no Indiana cases. We have cited cases from other jurisdictions that have said that in and of itself is not enough. And whether what the circumstances were, whether Van Liner, wouldn't be Van Liner, obviously, security, the measures, if any, they took to enforce that provision, circumstances under which that provision was in the agreement, there's nothing before the court. And for that reason, we believe that it was error for the court to rule that that in and of itself created a situation where the anti-subrogation rule would not apply in this case. When Mr. Taylor, he was not deposed, and when his declaration was filed in support of the summary judgment motion, there is nothing in the declaration which made us believe that there was any need to take his deposition, because all it said was that he was driving, which was not disputed, and that there was some issue as to the status of Madeline Reynolds, and he said that he had asked Madeline Reynolds to come along, and he was going to pay her out of the money that he got from Sampat, and for all practical purposes, there was nothing left, nothing else in his declaration, and at that time, we did not believe there was any need to take a deposition.
Mr. Abramson, the Indiana, as I understand it, follows the liberal rule on permissive use.
That's correct.
But there's a 1997 case, Warner Trucking versus Hall from Indiana, which says that there's a specific provision of prohibition, then the liberal rule cannot be invoked. I don't know. I don't have a later case than that. I don't think either side quoted Warner. I may have missed that.
I don't think there is a later one.
And aren't we sort of bound by that interpretation of the liberal rule?
Well, when you say, are we bound by it?
Well, I mean, we owe it great deference, I would say.
Right. What I'm saying is that each one of these fact cases, or each one of these cases, are very, very fact specific, and it's a question of specifically what the prohibition was.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying the mere fact, and I don't mean to minimize it, the fact, I guess I should say, that Mr. Taylor's license was suspended at the time should not be enough to turn everything over and say, we don't know why, we don't know when, and we don't care. No license, case over. And we're asking the court to take a look at it and to consider it, and basically, under the standard of review, to take a fresh look, and we believe that the court does that, that judgment should be reversed. I'm going to save some time for rebuttal.
Very good, Mr. Abramson. Thank you. Ms. Dunajewski?
May it please the court? I too will be brief, since my esteemed colleague has been brief and come right to the issue in this case. I can provide a little clarification. On page 20 of the appellee's brief is the relevant portion of the contractor service operating agreement that demands that any driver of the vehicle be properly licensed under DOT regulations. I can also provide some clarification on the Warner case. The Warner case cites a couple of the cases that were cited in the appellee's brief, both the State Farm versus Gonterman case and the Arnold versus State Farm case, that both come to the issue of permissive use under the liberal rule in Indiana. District Court properly held in this case that under this fact situation, under the fact situation that was presented at summary judgment, Van Liner and Security would be entitled to indemnity under the express terms of the contractor service operating agreement from the estate of Ramdale Sampat. The district court did give a nod to the MCS 90 endorsement that any trucking liability policy must have. The MCS 90 endorsement, as you may know, is the safety net that provides protection for the motoring public to make sure that there is a pool of funds from which damaged people can be made whole. However, even the MCS 90 endorsement looks to indemnity to properly place the responsibility for wrongful actions in transportation law. In examining both the contractor service operating agreement that Mr. Sampat signed and the MCS 90 endorsement, the court determined that Vanliner, as subrogee of security, was entitled to indemnity. And the reason for that was, at the time of the occurrence, at the time of the accident, the vehicle was not being operated with security's permission. We've outlined how the coverage issue addresses in the brief of the appellee, so you can see where we get from the omnibus clause, who is an insured, who is the named insured under the policy, down to the permissive use argument. But as you can see, this case presents on a very limited factual background. Indeed, the entire factual background was provided by Vanliner and Security, the movements below. Vanliner and Security's complaint, together with the attachments, include the Vanliner policy and the contractor service operating agreement. We also have Vanliner's statement of material facts that it filed along with its motion for summary judgment, with attachments that included the affidavit of the driver, Jesse Taylor. It is significant to note in this instance that the appellant never filed an answer in this case, thus admitting all of the well-pleaded allegations of Vanliner and Security's complaint, including the validity of the contractor service operating agreement, in which Sampat agreed that any driver of the equipment would be properly licensed as required by DOT regulations and law, and in which Sampat agreed to indemnify security against all claims and liabilities arising out of operations. Both sections of that agreement are cited in briefs of appellees. Two additional paragraphs of the answer, which are deemed admitted, are important here. First, that Jesse Taylor was the operator of the vehicle at the time of the occurrence, and that Taylor had no valid commercial driver's license at the time of the occurrence.
There's nothing to indicate that Sampat knew that Taylor's license was suspended, is there?
No, there isn't, but the contractor service operating agreement would tend to put that burden on Sampat. If he is undertaking the duty to provide a driver of equipment permanently leased to security, then it would be his duty to be certain that any driver that he provides would be properly licensed. Probably the only driver he can be absolutely certain is properly licensed is himself, unless he undertakes the kind of due diligence that trucking companies do on their own. Now, in this instance, for this occurrence, neither Sampat nor Taylor were insured under the security policy. And the reason for this is because they were not using the permanently leased equipment with security's permission. Security had a permission that was expressly and explicitly limited from the time they first took possession of the equipment under the contractor service operating agreement. And by the way, it's nothing more onerous than requiring that the people who drive that vehicle do so lawfully. Indiana's liberal rule really has been refined to the point now through the Warner case and the other cases cited in the brief, where it's very clear that where the permission is restricted in the first instance, I believe is the terminology used by Judge Major from the Indiana Court of Appeals, then this any further use outside of that permission is not permissive use. So we have an instance where, although someone may be using security equipment or equipment leased to security, they're not doing so with their permission. Hence, the issue is not a deviation from initially permitted use, but whether that use was restricted from the outset. there was a nod to an argument as to whether or not Mr. Taylor or Mr. Sampat were employees of security in the brief. My esteemed colleague has not argued that here today, but we would say that the only evidence in the record, and that would be the record that was provided exclusively by Van Liner, is the contractor service operating agreement, which shows that indeed neither of these individuals were employees. It is specifically listed in that agreement that they were independent contractors, or at least Mr. Sampat was an independent contractor. And if there are no questions,
thank you. Mr. Abramson?
Judge Cuddy, as you asked whether there's anything in the record indicating that Mr. Sampat was aware at any time that the driver's commercial driver's license, Mr. Taylor, had been revoked, and the answer is there is not. With regard to the proceedings in the lower court, a substantial portion of the time and effort and briefing had to do with the claim of security that Mr. the Sampat survivor could not maintain a common law action but was relegated to a workers' compensation claim. And the question of employee versus independent contractor was argued and briefed by both parties. Judge Moody, in his ruling, said it doesn't make any difference whether, and Judge Moody did indicate that Mr. Sampat, that the Sampat heirs did have the right to maintain a common law action against Jesse Taylor, and that the Sampat heirs were not limited to a workers' compensation claim. The court then went on, and under the issues that we've been discussing here today, said, however, if he recovers a verdict, or a judgment, I should say, against Taylor, and if security has to pay it, why then he's obliged to indemnify and come right back around. We asked the court to examine the case under the factual scenario, in a de novo approach, and to reverse the decision of the lower court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Everson. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the second case of the day, the United States versus Gonzalez et al. Mr. Cohn.